Welcome to the Todd Shapiro Show on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Here's Todd Shapiro.
Oh, wow. It's awesome being back in studio. I had about a week off there, and yesterday was a fun show with Bilal taking the reins here and me doing it remotely last minute. But it's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to chatting with Timothy S. Johnston. He is an author, really interesting author, actually. I have a feeling he's got a really, really fascinating mind behind him. As he writes futuristic and contemporary mystery thrillers. And the book he's going to be talking about is The War Beneath and the Rise of Oceania. So we'll find out what that's all about. It's going to get intriguing for sure. Hey, my mom is joining us on the show today. How exciting is that here in the 360 Secure Studios? My mom, Vivian Shapiro, she's a wonderful lady. I'm sure everybody says that about their moms, or maybe not. Maybe not everybody. Maybe, Blau, you like your mom?
She doesn't smile in her photos, though. It's weird.
Okay, well, we got to get your mom to smile in her photos. And she's going to be talking about the Waterfront Magazine Awards. Is she hosting them? My goodness, I didn't even know that. Good for my mom, and that'll be fun. Jeff Abraham, this is fascinating. We've been following his story along for quite some time now with Reckitt Beckkaiser, which is RB on sort of this theory that they might allegedly take people's small businesses and their formulas and things out of them. And they recently just settled $1.4 billion in an opioid settlement. So, and Jeff's got his own thing going on with them, and it's going to be a part of the American Greed podcast, that story coming out. It might even be out right now. And then Ari Goldkind, and we'll talk about body cams with Ari Goldkind at about 6:30. Thanks, 6:30. Thank you so much for being here. Come on back with us.
This is Todd Shapiro Show on Canada Talks.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your support.
Sirius XM 167.
Okay, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for hanging out with us. Big shout out to HealthSpace, HS is their ticker symbol, check it out. Thank you to CanadianTire.ca and My Canvas Collection over CanadianTire.ca. Samsung Appliances, go to @SamsungCanada. Hey, thanks to Jiffy On Demand, check out the Jiffy app if you need little fixes here and there. BovidInc.com, these are two-way humidity control packs, keeping your flower fresh. Thanks to our friends over at Lake Wilcox Brewing. Permescent.com, hey, the Scotiabank to Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer is going on, my goodness. We got a lot of catching up to do. We really got to get on this and start to fundraise and raise some money. We're a little bit behind this year, so let's help out. And thank you very much to Carboni Pizza. And they're all across, like in the sort of Winnipeg area now, and they're going to be expanding across Canada. And don't ever get high and drive, my friends. That's a little reminder from NamasteTechnologies.com. Getting right back into it. Great to be back sitting here in studio. Thank you for listening to us live in the 360 Secure Studios. And joining us, author of The War Beneath the Rise of Oceania, is Timothy S. Johnston. Hi, Timothy.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. So, you know, I got to tell you, we had author J.J. Martin on the other day, and a really great great interview about his book. And he goes, he got off, and he goes, and he's a friend of mine away from it, and he goes, you got to have Timothy Johnston on. He's a brilliant guy. You're really going to vibe with him. And he's really interesting. I said, I like brilliant guys I'm going to vibe with that are interesting. So let's do it. So here you are.
Oh, you're putting the pressure on me.
Oh, no pressure at all, dude. I drove in from London, Ontario.
I did.
How's the nice place to live in London?
It's a great place, you know, especially if you're raising a family. It's not too big. It's not too small. It's got space for the kids. It's a lovely little town.
How big are the kids? How old?
15 and 12.
Okay, 15 and 12. So you're an author. I've been writing books for quite some time now. How long have you been doing the writing for?
Well, it's funny. You'd mentioned J.J. Martin. I call him Jake, but J.J. and I were...
You call him Jake?
I call him Jake. I think I'm the only one that calls him Jake.
Okay, because I call him Jason normally.
Jason, right? Yeah. Some people call him Jay. He's written a book called Father Sweet right now that's out in stores. And we were high school friends. We were buddies. And...
Winnipeg? Did you grow up in Winnipeg?
London. Yeah, I'm from London, Ontario.
Okay.
Right. So we were...
I thought he was a Winnipegger.
I think he was, I think he grew up in Ottawa and then moved to London.
Okay, jeez, right. That's weird. Okay, sorry, go on. Yeah, so you're buddies.
So we were buddies and we liked the same things. We spent a lot of time working on our writing as well. And so when I was 17 years old, I'd always had in mind that I wanted to be a storyteller of some sort. And when I was 17, I thought, you know what, this is something I'd love to do. I'd like to take a crack at it. And I spent years and years working at it, sending away manuscripts to editors, agents, publishers. I can't tell you how many rejections I have. It's in the hundreds.
It's like Bilal's dating life.
Yeah.
It's,
no, that's in the thousands.
Okay.
It's hundreds and hundreds of rejections. You know, you could cover a wall with them. And it took 25 years before I got the first book deal, and that was for The Furnace, which is a whodunit murder mystery in outer space. I'm a big fan of Agatha Christie. I love those kind of cozy murder mysteries in a remote location, and there's an inspector arrives to figure out the mystery.
Who done it?
And I wanted to take one of her mysteries and transform it into a techno thriller. And so I did it. It takes place in outer space. It's called The Furnace. And that was my first book deal. The Furnace, the second one was The Freezer, and the third one was The Void. And that was picked up when I was 42, so it took 25 years.
My goodness.
25 years of writing. By the time it got picked up, I had 5 books that were completed and on my hard drive. I would finish one, edit it to my satisfaction, and then move on to another, all without knowing what would come of these novels. They might die with me, never see the light of day, which what happened to me is I finally got someone to show some interest, picked it up, released it. And now here I am with The War Beneath, which is my 4th novel out in bookstores.
At what point did you write this a while ago that's now out now? Or was this something you worked on after the other ones in succession?
This was one of the ones I was on my hard drive when I sold The Furnace. I actually wrote it in 2008.
Unbelievable.
It was an idea that had been gestating with me when I was a university student in the 80s and early 90s. I'd been looking at environmental devastation going on. It was an ongoing theme in almost every course I took at Western University, UWO at the time. People were talking about the ozone hole, which isn't talked about so much lately, greenhouse effect, rising ocean levels. And I just got to thinking, you know, what's going to happen in 100 years when the oceans are swallowing our coastal cities and our shipping facilities and global warming is affecting our cropland? And I just got to thinking that the oceans would probably be the next realm for society to look at. And a lot of science fiction and thriller authors look to outer space. And I thought, you know, it'd be cool to write a kind of techno thriller that takes place underwater. It's 100% underwater, this book, The War Beneath. And it's about society is looking to the oceans and they're trying to harvest resources. They're trying to settle the ocean floors. They're trying to mine. They're farming fish. And of course, it's triggered a cold war between the superpowers of the world. So really the book is, although it is futuristic, it's a cold war espionage thriller like James Bond, but underwater. There isn't a single scene that takes place above the water in this book.
Timothy S. Johnson is joining us, author of The War Beneath. Really interesting stuff. So I always think to myself, Juan, how do you write when you at that point you're having young kids at home? how do you concentrate with young ones at home to do that?
You hope that they go to bed early.
Yes.
And that they sleep through the night. And let me tell you, I'm awake till 1, 2 is common. Just working away and then drinking a lot of coffee in the morning to get through those days.
For sure.
Yeah, and a very understanding wife is helpful as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
She saw all the work that I was putting into it, and although she didn't know what was ever going to happen of this, she was very supportive of me.
I love to hear that. Now, in terms of writing a novel that is fiction and really futuristic, how much fact-checking do you have to do? How much research has to go into, wait a second, how can we have sustainable farming underwater at some point? How does a war operate in a cold war? And, you know, how do countries position themselves? And like, how much goes into that into a book?
It's a good question. People ask me all the time, how much time do you spend writing? And the answer is I spend way more time researching, plotting, and editing than I do actually writing. The writing is is fairly quick compared to those other things. And once you have the framework down for the book, then you can go in and tear it to pieces and edit it and change it. The research is crucial. Do months and months of research beforehand. This book, as I mentioned, it ties into my studies in university. So a lot of the research was done at that point. But for sure, I had to research what you're talking about. So the people in my book, they're farming kelp. So I had to figure out, you know, like how fast does kelp grow? What do we use kelp for? It turns out that kelp grows a meter a day. And when we're looking at
a meter a day
in the right conditions. So if we're looking at a situation on the continents, in the breadbasket regions of the continents, with global warming and cropland dying or not growing as quickly, and our exploding populations on the surface, we're going to be looking at oceans for more resources and kelp, which is already used in many diets of the world in other countries. It's already used in many products that we have here in North America that people don't even know about. It's put in toothpaste to make toothpaste thicker. It's a thickening agent. It's a source of protein. It's put in milkshakes, for instance, to keep them thicker. But when it grows a meter a day, it all of a sudden becomes a very, very viable source of a viable resource for us. Now, not that the book is about that.
It's just another one of those things in the book that you would want to know.
It's just background knowledge, you know. So as a writer, I want to put people in the oceans, living on the ocean floor. And they're living in the shallow ocean floor, so 30 meters, so not too deep at all. But I have to think to myself, well, why are they there? You know, I want to have a cold war underwater. I want nations fighting each other. I want torpedo battles. I want hand-to-hand combat underwater and people in scuba gear. But I have to answer the question, why are they there? And this is why, because they're farming, they're fishing, they're mining.
I love to hear that, Timothy. We got a quick call. John from Michigan's on the phone. Hey, John.
Hey, Todd. Welcome back. I am hooked already. And your guest actually answered the question I have. I was going to ask who your influence was, because I read quite a few mysteries. And just going by what you're talking about, I would also think that you've probably read a lot of more like Ray Bradbury things, too, if you're combining the two genres.
Hi, thanks for calling in. I have read, obviously, if I want to be a writer of this material, I have to be very well read in the material. And it's a story that I tell to a lot of people. I go into classrooms and I talk to students as well, creative writing students. When I was in grade 8, so 12, 13 years old, I was reading Jaws, The Exorcist. I was reading Edgar Allan Poe. I found Stephen King. A little later on, I found Michael Crichton. Now, Michael Crichton to me is the...
I love Michael Crichton books, to be honest. And I thought about that and how Michael Crichton writes books, like the things he'll know about military and things like that, or Clancy as well. Like they know so much that it's almost as if they're, you know, providing you with information beyond the story, that it's like a history lesson, even though it's not real. So, you know, that's sort of where I was thinking about it.
Right. And Michael Crichton, rest in peace. He was someone that I absolutely idolize. Sphere is one of my favorite books of all time. Jurassic Park is just genius, because he was actually writing science fiction, but he was writing it for the mainstream, which is something I'm trying to do as well.
Dumbing it down?
not at all.
No, I know.
But making it understandable. And
that's dumbing it down. It's okay.
it's a trick, though. If you put too much science in the book, you've alienated...
It's tough to keep up.
You've alienated your audience. If you put too much dialogue in your book, you've alienated. If you put too much exposition, you've alienated. So it's a delicate, fine balance. And I really have looked to Michael Crichton, because he was a master of it. Even his books that are not so technological, like... Disclosure, although there is some tech in Disclosure, is just unputdownable. I still remember reading Disclosure. I started it at 8 or 9 at night. I could not put that book down. I was up till 4 a.m. I got sick the next day. I had to go to work the next day. It was just a brutal day. But these are the influences that that really made a difference for me. One was Isaac Asimov. When I was a teenager, I discovered Foundation by Asimov, and his books are just riveting. And the strange thing about them is there's not a lot of exposition. It's mostly dialogue, and he just keeps you turning the pages. Foundation is his big series that I've that I'm a fan of, and the robot novels as well.
We're supposed to be promoting The War Beneath, but let's not talk about other books that people haven't read. Yeah. John, any other questions? Any follow up?
No, but thank you. And Isaac Asimov would have been my second guess as one of your influences. And look forward to picking up your book. And I assume it's available on audiobook as well.
The book, thanks, John, for calling in. The book, The War Beneath, is available in ebook and in paperback currently.
I gotta do the. There's an audio version.
There is not an audio
version.
No,
if you need a voice, I'll do the voice for you. Okay, I should get an audio book. Thanks, John, and we appreciate the
call, man.
So real briefly, why don't you give us? You know, we've sort of heard a brief synopsis of this, but why don't you, without giving away too much, the back page version? What can people expect in The War Beneath?
Well, the thing with the commercial thriller, which this is really, it is futuristic. There's some technology.
It's a great movie already, I'm thinking.
It's visual because it's all underwater.
Yes.
But the thing that that I like to say is it's a underwater techno thriller. It's people living underwater, and in the thing about a commercial thriller is you have to get to this to the story immediately. So in the very first chapter, my protagonist, his name is Mac Truman McCluskey, but people call him Mac. He's a blue collar guy. He's given a mission. He's sent out right in the very first chapter, and he's decided to kill this person that he's supposed to be chasing. And that's the thing about a thriller is you have to get to the point right off the bat. So when you hit the end of that first chapter, I hope people are thinking to themselves, oh man, I have to find out, is Mac going to catch this guy? Is Mac going to kill this guy? What's Mac going to do when he catches up to him? And it's a grand chase around the world, but totally underwater. One of the themes that I've thought a lot about, I've thought about with this book is fathers and sons. And I'm not sure if you've ever given a lot of thought to this, but I think a lot
of... It's all I give thought to be honest, with my little boy at home.
Oh yeah, I think a lot of men... think about this. I'm not sure if women experience the same thing, but as children, as boys, we look up to our dads and we see them as these larger than life characters. They seem to be successful. They seem to be confident.
Strong.
Yeah. They're huge compared to us. They seem to be able to walk into a room and conversate with people. There don't ever seem to have hesitations or issues or problems with that. For children, this is actually difficult to do, especially teenagers. It's challenging to walk into a room and know what to say and who to talk to and what's going on. They seem to have respect of others. They command authority sometimes. And so this is one of the themes that I play with in this book is my character is dealing with a father who's dead now, but he did something that has left a legacy for him, which my character Mac resents and regrets, and he has to live under the shadow of this. Now, as the book progresses, he learns more and more about his dad and what his dad was doing. And I really enjoyed writing about this. I think a lot about celebrities and children of celebrities and how they deal with life with a father who's incredibly successful, incredibly popular, and they're kind of in the shadow of this dad. And this is what I've played with as well. I think a lot about Star Wars, which I saw. You've seen it as well, I'm assuming. I saw when I was 7 years old. So I was born in 70. In 77, it was in theaters. And back then, we would walk to the theater on our own. I was 7 years old.
Sure.
We would pay $2 to see the movie. And the ushers would actually let us stay for the second showing. And on a rainy day, like today, we would actually stay in the theater.
8 hours.
Yeah,
sure.
So I saw Star Wars 14 times in the theater. And in the first movie, Luke idolizes his dad. He's talking about his dad all the time. Like, my dad fought the rebellion. I want to follow my dad's footsteps. I need to be up in outer space. I have to get off this planet. I want to do what my dad was doing. And the writers in the second movie, we would call it episode 5 now, but they flipped it on his head. It was a brilliant decision. At the end of Empire Strikes Back, Luke realizes the truth, and he realizes this man that he's idolized all of his life is not the person he thought, and in fact is the most evil person in the universe. And it was a brilliant decision because the audience was hooked already, but at that point the audience was, oh my God, like, what is going on here? There was a big chunk of the audience after the Empire Strikes Back that thought Darth was lying. That it was, that can't be true. It's not true. That is not true. They would never do that to us. But this theme of fathers and sons plays a big role in this book.
And in terms of like living underwater, how does that happen? How do you portray that for people to live underwater?
The challenging thing about living underwater and writing about it is the different pressures involved, and depends on what depth you're at. So if you're at a certain depth and you go out, then you come back in, you have to depressurize, for instance. And if you're out in scuba gear and then you want to enter a submarine, now all of a sudden that's at a different pressure, and then you have to depressurize before you. So it becomes a challenging issue for writers.
To be accurate.
Other writers have had issues with this. So what I did is because it's futuristic, it allows me to solve some of these issues. So I've said in my book, The War Beneath, and it's...
You have a self-pressure regulator.
Well, the series is called The Rise of Oceania. So it's futuristic. So I've made every vessel, every underwater habitat standardized at the same pressure, 4 atmospheres. So they're living at 30 meters down. That's 4 atmospheres pressure. So they can come and go as they please from ship to ship via umbilicals, it solved a lot of my dilemmas.
What year is this taking place in? Around
2129. So about 100 years from now, they're dealing with exploding populations on the surface, cropland dying, and although the book isn't about that, it's provided the setting for me.
And Timothy, do you sort of foresee it being fairly not the story itself, but like the state of the world? Do you fear that we might need to live underwater one day?
I would say yes eventually, but for resource extraction.
Yeah,
that's what it would be for, and it's already happening. There's already habitats underwater. There's already saturation divers who are maintaining oil rigs, for instance. We discovered and when I say we, I mean other people.
Yep,
discovered about 2 months ago kelp forests in the Arctic exploding, blooming because of warming oceans. And so we're looking for new resources. And here just north of Canada is a kelp forest, which is just absolutely exploding. And so I do see us removing more and more resources from the oceans to service our population. We're almost at 8 billion people. We're dealing with global warming. Our shipping facilities are going to be affected eventually. We're going to be building barriers around major cities like New York City eventually. And so this is a future that I foresee.
And in terms of like giving birth, how does that happen? Have you thought about that? Is that touched on at all?
Well, they live in underwater in cities.
Okay.
So there's, yeah.
Like they're sheltered cities?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I wasn't getting. They're actually sheltered cities underwater.
Like domes or...
Yeah,
or
unbelievable.
Pressurized at 4 atmospheres. So the thing that makes...
That's my disconnect here, to be honest.
So that's what makes it exciting for me as a writer, is I've decided they're standardized at 4 atmospheres pressure in their underwater, in their underwater habitats, in their submarines. And if they get into trouble, they can't swim to the surface because the surface could be 30 meters away. And if you lose your scuba gear, your oxygen line gets cut. You can't just dart to the surface because you'll die of the bends. So the characters in the book have to solve the issues.
Dude, this would be the best movie.
Sing it to me.
You author, is that insulting to an author to say you write a wonderful novel for people to read and, oh my goodness, how dare I assume that its intention was to one day be adapted into a screenplay and a movie? Or is that part of the strategy?
No, listen, I'm honored that you would say that. Don't feel bad at all, because when I was growing up, when I was a teen, I was watching movies like Terminator, Blade Runner, Total Recall, Alien, The Thing is probably my second.
Were they all books before?
Some were, some weren't.
Okay.
But I just have to think about that. Yeah, some weren't. Like Terminator came from James Cameron's brain. But I'm very visual as a result. And those properties were escapist for me. Because as a teenager, I wasn't the most popular kid. I was, you know, acne, skinny, tall. I'm 6 feet. I'm skinny still. I was skinny then. When I graduated from grade 13, I was probably 130 pounds and 6 feet tall. So you can see what I was like. And so properties like that, whether it's books, movies, video games, they were escapist for me. I was losing myself in them sometimes as a means to get away from the hardships of, you know, teenage life. And teenagers, we forget as adults, they have a brutally difficult life and there's not a lot of support for them. And so
yeah, it's very challenging. And I forget sometimes, but you know, like, listen, and while I'm a massive stud today there, Timothy,
not at all, man.
I'm just blessed with a family and a wife, and I've had a lot of fun in the media industry without a doubt, which, you know, helps some stupid status or whatever. But you know, I was bullied often as a child. And I know, like, there are times and you know, I could mention on stories that had happened to me where you wouldn't go out because you were fearing someone might kick your ass, whatever. But it forces you to be sort of creative by yourself at home. And I actually got a lot of creativity by spending time by myself. And what you mentioned, father and son, and sorry, I'm taking away a bit from the book, but even my 4-year-old, he's going to be 4 August 2nd. There's August, what's his birthday? August 3rd. I already see him creating these little characters with dolls that aren't the characters he's creating. And I'm like, that to me is so special, because if you have that in your mind and you can put that vocally or on paper or on a screenplay one day, what a wonderful asset to have for life.
Any sort of creative outlet to help teenagers or small children is totally beneficial. I've always told my own daughters, if you ever want a book, I'll buy it for you. No questions asked. I'll get it for you. It's not a Christmas. It's not a birthday. Yep. I'll just get it. It was the best decision I ever made.
Oh, that's
was
cool.
To get them involved in reading and just exercising their creative and imaginations. And so, as I was saying, I just found those properties so helpful for me as a teenager. Not that I was a total recluse and I didn't have friends. The friends I made in high school are still my best friends to this day.
Sure, Jake being one of them.
J.J. Martin, yeah, celebrated author. Those properties really got me through a lot of hard times, and I wanted to contribute to the genre when I was... when I managed to get published.
The War Beneath the Rise of Oceania. Back to the book for a moment. Timothy S. Johnston, available wherever you can get books, basically,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a second and a third book coming as well. The second one is called The Savage Deeps, and it's coming in November. And the third one is called Fatal Depth. It's coming in 2020.
Wow, that's awesome, yeah. Man. So yeah. A series.
It's a series, and those two are written already and in the pipeline.
Oh, that is very cool. That must be nice, knowing they're coming and the work's been put in. What I wanted to ask is about territories, because you often hear on the open waters, like, how do you define a territory, a country, a society? You know, because you mentioned about Cold War, so obviously there's battles between certain countries. How do you determine that underwater?
Currently, countries have a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone. So generally, that's the territory. The good thing about writing a book that's called The War Beneath is that underneath that's the skin of the ocean, no one really knows what's happening. And that's where the war, it's a cold war, but it's rapidly turning hot. No one really knows what's going on. And so it's a Cold War espionage thriller, as I mentioned, and they don't always pay attention to that 200-mile exclusive zone.
Wow, that's are there different nationalities in within the book?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that too. I wrote this in 2008, and the antagonist nation in the book is China, and we're seeing this happen more and more with.
Are you from the future? The future? Saving the planet?
Sometimes I think so. Yeah.
You might be from the future.
I might be, yeah.
Yeah, you might have been sent back to help waken up our minds. Right. When people read this, will they get the moral cause about trying to protect the Earth? You know. Is there an underlining theme in that?
The environmental aspect of this is simply the setting. It's not about that at all. I don't talk about how to protect the Earth.
Sure.
In any way.
But I mean, just knowing, like, oh my goodness, like, if this could happen one day,
I think
what's our duty? It seems like you want to pass that. I feel like that's an important message to you.
Well, we're in a path now where it's inevitable. Global warming is
we're done. We're screwed.
Well, a huge portion of it is human caused. Portion of it is also natural because we're coming out of an ice age, and it's at this point.
Well, there's the cow farts. Let's not forget about the cow farts, all right?
And the rice paddies. The thing is, it's almost we're at a point now where we have to just mitigate what's happening, try to deal with it, and try to adapt as best we can. Now we can try to cut down on the greenhouse gases without a doubt. Plastic in the oceans is a huge concern. Whereas when in the 80s and 90s, we were talking about the ozone hole. Nowadays, we're talking about plastic in the oceans, which is absolutely a concern. But it's not the it's not the focus of the book. The book is a commercial thriller.
Can people buy land? Can you buy water land? Can people buy?
You can not, but you can build your own islands, which we're seeing happen in China, for instance, there. And Japan is doing it as well. They're just building islands there and claiming them as their own territory.
I didn't realize that. I know Dubai was like expanding little areas outside there, but I didn't realize people are actually building. It's funny. My brother is a documentary film maker. He did a book My Country or Country. Jesus, now I forget the name. He's going to kill me. My mom will remember. She's on next. And it was about people, like a couple of them anyway, owned like this like little island out there that they built, like they built themselves and stuff. Kind of fascinating. Had their own country, whatever it's called. A really interesting documentary.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, made about 10 years ago. Well, listen, Timothy, it was really nice chatting with you. You joked with me because you heard the interview I did with J.J. Martin. And Father Sweet was his novel. And I was sort of joking. I really wish I did read more, and I keep saying I'm going to, and my goal is to, but now I got to decide what book is it, his or yours. This to be honest is more of my like, because I like the sci-fi, I like the interesting sort of protagonist and the villains and stuff, so I'm going to do my very best, but if I don't do it, I want everybody else to. The War Beneath, Timothy S. Johnston, and just please go and get it. Is there a website it's also?
TimothySJohnston.com is my website, and I run a blog there and news and alerts up there. And my publisher is Cheezine Publications, and you can check the book out at their site as well.
I love it. @TSJ_author. Congrats on all the great success, and we look forward to part two and part three and the Savage Deeps and Fatal Depth. And as well, I'm sure you're working on other things that we're going to get. You got something else?
I have some appearances nearby.
Oh, good, please. Yeah.
In August, I'll be signing at Indigo Cambridge on August 10. August 17, I'm at Indigo Kitchener. On the 21st, I'm actually doing a reading at the Round Venue in Kensington Market area at 8 o'clock p.m. On August 23rd, I'm at Fan Expo in Toronto here. I'll be at the Cheezine booth. And on August 24th, I'll be at Indigo Stony Creek.
Oh, that's very cool, dude.
October 5th and 6th, I'll be at London Comic Con. At
great.
The Cheezine booth. There's a lot there. Sorry. Thank you.
No, don't be sorry at all. I love this stuff. And the Comic Cons, I would imagine that it's really a wonderful crowd to pick up a book like this, you know, with their amazing bright minds deep thing. Yep. You know, they think deeply. And I love that, you know.
Right.
And those have exploded. They're doing so well.
Comic-Cons, yes.
I like the Comic-Cons a lot because it's really good for actors to earn some supplemental income who might have been doing films that have cult followings and stuff and maybe don't get all the work in the world, but can make a great living doing these things. So it's important for that aspect too.
Yeah, I haven't been to any before. This is actually my first one that I'm going to.
Oh, it's
going to
be cool.
And Fan Expo and the London Comic-Con. But I'm hoping one day to meet William Shatner at one. Maybe.
Yes, no doubt. I had a run-in once with Geordie LaForge. What's his real name?
LeVar Burton.
LeVar Burton, yeah. When I used to do more shock jockey stuff on The Edge when I worked there, and I had interviewed him, and I said, I can't believe you're out without those glasses. You can see. It's unbelievable. And he actually got really mad. He was like, I guess he had heard that one too many times. He's like,
visor.
He did not like it. It was so funny. I just thought he was like kind of jokey. And he actually took it very, the clip is somewhere on YouTube if people want to find it. Timothy, good luck with the book and all the other books, and have fun at the expos and the readings. Again, Timothy S. Johnston, The War Beneath. Really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd.
Excellent. We'll be back in a moment in the 360. Secure Studios. Guess who is going to be calling us here live on air? My mother, my mom, Vivian Shapiro. And she'll be talking about hosting the Waterfront Awards and what the Waterfront Awards mean to her and mean to people. And I can also share with you some wonderful stories about how I was bickering with my mom last night, who came to help me move into my new place. And I was getting mad at her for not being quick enough. And I can be honest and apologize to her live on air in front of everyone, because I always stand behind accountability, people. If you're wrong, you have a moment to think about it, say sorry, and then hopefully you can move on. But be accountable. Don't hide from it. Back in a moment.
This is the Todd Shapiro Show on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.